Hi, Raja.
Hey, Mom. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
We having this heat wave. I don't know. You know, brown sugar melts.
That's true.
What's going on with you?
I'm just percolating. You know.
I like that. I like that. Time for the percolator. Hey, percolator.
Yeah.
I'm Angela, the mom.
I'm Raja, the daughter.
And this is
Pumpkin
Brown Sugar.
Sugar. All right, let's get started with some news.
Yeah, some sugar cubes, a.k.a. the news. Well, we're going to put a little sugar in your cup.
Yeah, the first story we have up today. Georgia prosecutors have messages showing Trump's team is behind the voting system breach. Atlanta area prosecutors investigating efforts to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia are in possession of text messages and emails directly connecting members of Donald Trump's legal team to the early January 2021 voting system breach in Coffee County, sources tell CNN. And Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis is expected to seek charges against more than a dozen individuals when her team presents its case before the grand jury next week. Several individuals involved in the voting systems breach in Coffee County are among those who made false charges in the sprawling criminal probe. Investigators in the Georgia criminal probe have long suspected the breach was not an organic effort sprung from systematic Trump supporters. In rural and heavily Republican Coffee County, a county Trump won by nearly 70% of the vote. They gathered evidence indicating that it was a top-down push by Trump's team to access sensitive voting software, according to people familiar with the situation. Trump allies attempted to access voting systems after the 2020 election as part of a broader push to produce evidence that could back up the former president's baseless claims of widespread fraud. So, yeah, they have text messages and other court documents to show they hired operatives who sought to access the county's voting systems in the days before January 6th in 2021. Yeah, so 6 days before Trump, operatives gained unauthorized access to the voting systems. The local elections officials allegedly helped facilitate the breach, sent in a written invitation to attorneys working for Trump. They have written evidence that they were tampering and trying to tamper with their voting software.
I mean, they got so much on this man. It's just like a mission impossible to indict him. And I can see the frustration on this lady's face. They want him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people say these charges that are going to be brought up in Georgia are going to be similar to RICO charges. Yeah, I hope they get him. He's, you know, prosecuted to the full extent. Even if he doesn't have to serve time in the actual jail, I hope he gets sentenced to a bunch of years.
I want him to get sentenced and he can't run for president ever.
Yeah.
And people can take it any way they feel. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, I want him to serve time.
You know, because that was embarrassing to the United States. Very.
And that seemed to be a lot of his goal anyway. He broke up confidence in the country, confidence in our dollar, confidence in even us trusting
our safety, officials,
right? The officials, the people who went to work to learn how to do their job correctly. We don't trust the CDC. We don't trust EPA. We don't trust, you know, FD. We don't trust anybody anymore.
Don't trust
not saying that you are supposed to trust in any system, you know, foundationally from the ground up, the government. 100% of the time, because we didn't, you know, of course, everybody, not all the people you voted for
are right.
Whatever, but we supposed to be able to at least trust the people we voted for.
Yeah.
But when you have a president at the head who's just doing whatever the F they want, how can we, you know, trust that? That's a sane leadership. And now it's like people are questioning the current presidency because of, you know, all the stuff that's been going on. And it's like, it's just, it did damage that's going to take longer.
Yeah, the trust is
to rebuild. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, America.
America. That's why we can't keep. You just got to stay informed. Keep your head on the swivel.
Oh, yeah. Stay prayed up.
Yeah, stay prayed up, stay informed, and stay active.
Yeah, read about your people before you put them in these chairs.
Mm-hmm. And do your part. You know, there are movements, organizations you can lead as well. Just make sure you know what you're getting into.
And moving right along. What's our next little bit?
Yeah, this was a viral story. Michigan police chief and mayor apologized after the arrest video of a 12-year-old boy goes viral. Young black boy, 12 years old. A TikTok video of Michigan police arresting a 12-year-old, putting him in handcuffs, was an unfortunate misunderstanding that stemmed from the foot chase of a suspect wanted in a suspected vehicle theft. The video led to three statements by the mayor of Lansing, Andy Shore, and local police late Friday afternoon. The video appears to show a young black male wearing neon yellow shorts and a white t-shirt being detained by a police officer outside an apartment complex. A man tells officers they are traumatizing his son, and the male was put into the police vehicle before later being released to the man who said who was to be the individual's father. The video is posted to TikTok account Carrie Yan 372, generated millions of views and posts throughout social media, with users saying the boy was detained as he was throwing away garbage. So yeah, he was taking out the trash. And I did see this video. It lasts more than 4 minutes. It was not clear what city it was taken in at the time. The kid was taken out of the trash, being harassed by the police. The father is defending his son. It's the wrong person, the TikTok poster wrote on Thursday. In a Zoom call with reporters on Friday night, lawyers for the family asked that the police take down his Facebook post, saying that the photo makes it appear as though the t-shirt the young boy was wearing was white when it actually was gray.
Yes.
So, yeah, the police were looking for someone wearing a white shirt. It does not accurately reflect that Tayshaun was wearing. They need to take down post, yeah.
They were saying white shirt, neon shorts.
So, on Thursday afternoon, our officers were investigating a string of Kia thefts, including a specific one reported on the 3600 block of West Jolly Road with multiple suspects. A witness described the suspect as wearing neon shorts and a white shirt. A responding officer saw a subject matching the description and attempted to make contact, but the subject fled and ran west and into the apartment complex. Yeah, so they're trying to say mistaken identity. I'm glad it didn't turn violent, but, and you can see with at different angles, the shirt is gray. When the shirt's not, shorts not white. Yeah, it was just a kid taking out his trash in America.
And you could hear the neighbors telling the police, that's just a kid, even, you know, with the father. My heart just went out, and I was mad. I'm like, I'm tired of these mishaps. Like you said, I'm glad it wasn't deadly, but they handcuffed this child. You can look at him. He's a kid. You can look at him. You can tell he was minding his business. The dad said, wait a minute, where is he at? Let me go ahead and see where my child at. That's devastating. You're going to see your child coming. What? Why is he? What's going on here? An apology? They need more than an apology. They have a lawyer.
And the police were saying community relations is a top priority for this department from top down. The department wrote, our hope is we can put this unfortunate case of wrong place, wrong time behind us and continue to represent the community that we serve. And I'm thinking, if that's true, the officer should have known that child, or known of that child, if they have a community presence, like they say they do.
Stuff gets swept up on the rug. And I'm not saying mistakes happen all the time, man. But I'm just tired of these happening with these young black men and young black women. It's just pissing me off.
But yeah, there was a kid, there was a 12-year-old, so they were saying
12-year-old.
They were investigating. You know, you heard of the Kia Boys?
Yeah.
Because they found on YouTube and the internet videos of people showing how quickly and how easily It's a manufacturer's, I guess, like loophole or something with like Kia cars from I forget what year, where they can easily, I think it's like a screwdriver and a couple other tools they can use to break into the car and get it started. And so a lot of people who have Kias have been getting the cars broken into and stolen and come for joyrides and do whatever. They were saying that one of the suspects of a string of those kind of thefts matched that young boy's
description.
But it's like you didn't have, you arrested him before you had all your facts straight, and that's where they said the chase led them to. And so it's like he taking out the trash, and he's not running from you.
No,
he wasn't running from you. He, you know, his dad came out. Should have been more. It could have been more of a conversation before you detained him.
Yeah. Like, is this your child, or you know?
And he, that is a, yeah, it's my kid. He's been, he literally just left the house to take out the trash.
Yeah.
And he wasn't dressed, like, you can see how he was dressed. I think he had slides on.
Mm-hmm. But, sitting around the house chilling. Dad said, look, go and get that trash. Go ahead. All right.
And it's,
yeah, it was the same thing. I'm like, what, you know, you're in an apartment complex, and you're like, okay, taking a little long time. And, you know, we see what the climate of the world is, so. Yeah, let me go see where my child is at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the family is exploring all legal options, including a possible lawsuit.
Yeah.
To ensure the same situation doesn't happen to anyone else. Yeah. And that's what I mean. If they have a community presence, they would have been able to recognize.
Yeah, that's who they're looking
for. They were talking to. I rarely have anything positive to say, so we're going to move right along.
Yeah.
Billy Porter says he's been forced to sell his house due to strikes. You may have seen this in the news, but Billy Porter, it says, add him to the list of thousands financially affected by the SAG-AFTRA WGA strikes following the revelation that the actor will have to sell his house at an extremely precarious moment for entertainment workers. This quote from Billy Porter, I have to sell my house because we're on strike and I don't know when we're going to get back to work. He said in an interview with the Evening Standard in support of his music career, the life of an artist until you make fuck you money, which I haven't made yet. It's still like check to check. So I was supposed to be in a new movie and on a new television show starting September. None of that's happening. Porter continued to reference a July Deadline article quoting an anonymous exec on the WGA strike. So to the person who said we're going to starve them out until they have to sell their apartments, you've already starved me out. His actor comes just 100 days after the Writers Guild strike against the studios and streamers, which wouldn't agree to terms of the new film and TV contract it's been pursuing. The thespians are themselves 26 days into their own labor dispute. It says, Porter highlighted his personal situation in part to dispute a notion that actors strike among some lay people, that simply a bunch of millionaires trying to get more millions, rather than about cementing the financial security of the many in the working class. It says, the actor lamented that while in the industry once arranged its deals to allow for its performers to make a decent living, that some prospect has become impossible following the streaming boom. There's no contract for streaming, and they don't have to be transparent with the numbers. It's not a Nielsen ratings anymore, he explained. The streaming companies are notoriously opaque with their viewership figures. The business has evolved, so the contracts need to evolve and change, period. It also took aim at the July 13th comments of the Disney CEO, Bob Iger, who, while at the Sun Valley Conference, called the WGA and SAG-AFTRA unrealistic in their demands, expressing the belief that their steadfast commitment to their deal points has been very disruptive to an industry already weakened by COVID. To hear Bob Iger say that our demands for a living wage are unrealistic while he makes $78,000 a day, I don't have any words for it, but fuck you, said Porter. That's not useful, so I've kept my mouth shut. I haven't engaged because I'm so enraged. When I go back to the States from London, I will join the picket lines.
You know, listening to, you know, Billy Porter, that speaks volumes probably to all Americans, Plus, he's an actor. You know, you're trying to entertain. And the, what they say? The rich get richer. You know? It's... And you think these people are making all this money, but we need the writers. They need to get paid. You know, they got to take care of their families.
And there's so many people, like you said, behind the screen.
You know, the production people, the makeup people. Yeah. The roadies that move all this stuff around, equipment, setting up stuff, taking stuff down. And it's not right. And he's talking about, what? We're gonna, you know, like, it's like a mob. We're gonna make them suffer. We're gonna make them bleed. That's not right. I hope they don't even sleep at night. I hope they don't sleep at night. Because it's not fair. You put your butt out here remembering a script, trying to entertain the world, and you know, you say, oh wow, you know, you do a great job and you're not gonna get paid. I mean, that is just not good.
And you think about all the jobs that aren't paying living wage, expectation for people to still go to work, still go on about their day-to-day items of, you know, paying bills, how are you supposed to be living if you aren't living, making a living wage? So you're supposed to work. Where do you live? Like, where do you have time to live? And then people are expected not to be flipping out, stealing stuff, and acting like this is normal for us to be dealing with global warming, dealing with all these health issues, dealing with different systems that don't serve us in so many facets of our life, and we're just supposed to
hum-ba-da-dum-ba-da-dum. Oh, it's just another day.
And I know that, you know, people always say it could be worse, but what the hell? What's the
worst you gonna get? You can't even buy a loaf of bread, and you gotta sell your comfort. You gotta sell your home.
Your home. And that's what we're learning more about actors and actresses. We're seeing that the industry entertainment is even more trash than what we do know about from tabloids and, you know, whispers that get onto, you know, the front pages. They're getting paid 6 months in advance for some projects, or you get paid that one time. Meanwhile, it's in perpetuity via streaming, and the streaming services and the people who own the names and the properties, the IPs, they're making the money day to day and for years to come. Meanwhile, you, the person who made the art, who wrote the art, you get paid that one time. And it doesn't sound fair. Yeah,
no royalties.
Right, it's no royalties or anything. So it's just like another industry being demystified, and, you know, this great advancement of technology being able to, you know, help us get rid of commercials, but in us losing commercials, they had to get creative with advertisements and things.
All like that. And personally, I like my commercials.
I don't know too many people who are like that, because I'm fine without not having commercials.
I like the commercial. It gives me time to break away, even though you can, you know, stream it, pause it, do whatever. I like the commercial because I learned some stuff. I'm like, oh, interesting. I must try that.
Not you like being told to shop. Buy something you don't need. Do you need that new Swiffer?
Let's see. Let's
know. You know, you're good. Would you say the old classic soap, mop, and water?
That's me.
Ring it out.
With some gloves on though.
And it's just I feel like it's a air of waiting for something to pop off.
It is. I feel it too.
And for something to change, for us to have a better quality of living. Because America is just, it's not all she cracked up to be. Like, we're not that girl. We're not her.
Mm-mm.
We're not.
And I feel Lady Liberty, she ready to walk off her stand. She tired of this ish. She tired. She tired of holding up that light. She said, y'all ain't found out yet. Y'all don't need no daggone light. No. She going back to France.
We're the American dream is over. There's nothing here as far as like a great quality of living. And I'm not to say that it's not better than some other places, but it's
oh yeah. Everything has its perks and pros and cons.
But we aren't the receiving end of the perks.
And why so many people move to other international countries is because of these.
Yeah, it's on my list of
things
I would love to.
You got some American people too. There's everyday working people on different jobs. They're moving.
Yeah.
You know, they can afford it. They can afford different reasons, like, wow, they can go eat better, health-wise, all of that. All the good perks.
The standard of living here is so different from zip code, country to country. Well, not country, Lord. State to state is so insane to me how different the quality of living is. But collectively, it doesn't seem like it's the bee's knees.
If we go to certain places, like say in the States, some things be cut off from your benefits. Now, if you go internationally, you know your benefits are cut for the United States. That's understandable. You know, we understand all that. But you're right. And for us to be in the 50 states, like you said, who are we putting in these seats, make these decisions? Like some people are still getting stimulus checks. I would like to get a stimulus check.
Who's still getting a stimulus check?
Some places, some states are. It's up to them.
Oh, some states. Yeah, I think
it was states.
California.
Yeah.
I was like, huh? I missed a check. No, but like everybody, a lot living check to check is more common than people want to, I think, admit, because we've bought into if I work hard, I get X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't translate to, you know, you can't budget your way out of poverty. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're one emergency away from being houseless.
Yeah.
You know, so the severity of which we are living with rose-colored glasses is going to expire. And when that happens, I'm curious how we'll handle it as a people. And I'm still thinking about Montgomery, how we unified to protect that brother.
We protect that brother. I was there spiritually.
That's still on my heart. I'm still laughing at memes and jokes. But just thinking about how bad it could have been.
Oh,
how bad it is for us in this country as Black people. When you look at the intersections of your being, who you are, like I'm a Black, fat woman in America. And not to say that I don't appreciate where I am and the comforts I do have, but it could be a lot better for me and people who are and look like me in this country. Yeah. We should not have to be fearful of what could happen. And granted, anything can take you out any day, but
any day.
The rates and the stats I'm up against are staggering. And yeah, that's not to say that I live in fear. It's just living with that knowledge, knowing we don't have to, it's a bull crap.
Yeah, because it's right in your face now. Before it'd be possible, but not today. Now it's like, it could be today.
I'm hopeful still that we can come together and demand and pressure for better. Because I have also too been seeing stories where people have been, as communities, you know, putting their energy towards positivity.
I have to, yeah.
Make their leaders and people who can make those decisions make it happen, make something happen. So
I've been seeing different groups, like you say, coming together, letting people, look, we're trying to help each other, not fight against each other. We don't want
I've been doing my research to see where I can get in, where I fit in, and support where I can.
Yeah. Because I do a lot of volunteering, and it's a lot to be done. You know,
it is so much to be done, and the fact that we have to do more ourselves, some of this stuff should be universal and can be if we shift some money around.
Because where they spending some money on some of these, that's for another day.
Yeah, we'll touch on it. Another story we had, an author says AI is writing unauthorized books and they're being sold under her name on Amazon. This is New York. An author is raising alarms this week after she found new books being sold on Amazon under her name, only she didn't write them. They appear to have been generated by artificial intelligence. Jane Friedman, who has authored multiple books and consulted about working in the writing and publishing industry, she told CNN that an eagle-eyed reader looking for more of her work bought one of the fake titles on Amazon. The books had titles similar to subjects she typically writes about, but the text read as if someone had used a generative AI model, AI model to imitate her sound. When I started looking at these books and looking at the opening pages, looking at the bio, it was just obvious to me that it had been mostly, if not entirely, AI generated. I have so much content available online for free because I've been blogging forever, so it wouldn't be hard to get an AI to mimic me, Freeman says. With tools like ChatGPT now able to rapidly and cheaply pump out huge volumes of convincing text, some writers and authors have raised alarms about losing work to the new technology. Others have said they don't want their work being used to train AI models, which could then be used to imitate them. Generative AI is being used to replace writers, taking their work without permission, incorporating those works into the fabric of those AI models, and then offering those AI models to the public, to other companies to use to replace writers, Mary Rosenberger, CEO of the nonprofit Authors Advocacy Group, the Authors Guild, told CNN.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so you can imagine writers are upset about that.
Your hard work, your imagination, your creativity.
Yeah, last month, U.S. lawmakers met with members of the creative industries, including the Authors Guild, to discuss the implications of artificial intelligence. In a Senate subcommittee hearing, Rosenberger called for the creation of legislation to protect writers from AI, including rules that will require AI companies to be transparent about how they train their models. More than 10,000 authors, including James Patterson, Roxane Gay, and Margaret Atwood, also signed an open letter calling on AI industry leaders like Microsoft, ChatGPT maker OpenAI to obtain consent from authors when using their work to train AI models. And some compensate them fairly when they do. And to compensate them fairly for when they do. So yeah, this is a growing problem people have been talking about, especially as more companies are tapping into AI. I know that people are looking to move away from Google Docs because Google Docs updated their policy, letting people know that things that they have in their Google Drive may be used to train their AI. So anything you have saved now in different places are being accessed that way. Zoom also mentioned, I know, that they have AI training the recordings you do in your halls to train the AI. So it's just, like we said, technology is advancing faster than the laws can keep up with them. So it's kind of still a wild, wild west with AI.
And it's not ready. They've been talking about it. Yeah. Now it's here.
With the third worlds, too, because we're moving to the next generation of a lot of technology, internet. You know, we think about who's in the position to make the rules about how we use them, how it can be used to make profits, and who shares in the profits, what can be made public, if there are age limitations to that, how can it be used to educate or not, you know?
Yeah, in the school system, you know, it's so much.
And you think about how we use AI, and then I know ChatGPT, they're under fire because of how they train their models, their AI. So it's just a lot to learn in the coming months and years for them to get this right and to get us to be...
Yeah, like you said, get the laws correct.
Yeah, we haven't developed a code of ethics on how to use this. And I think in capitalism, in general, doesn't necessarily adhere to any real moral standard because somebody always has to be the one that's going to be sacrificed or has to lose in order for gains to be made. So it's already at a friction because money needs to be made and it doesn't matter how we're going to do it because it's quote unquote business and advancement, but we don't have, you know, rules and laws in place yet.
Until the right person steps on their toes or falls in their plate.
Right, and it's going to take a systematic approach to get that to happen, and we know the system is going to take be on its own timetable while they're still doing what they do. But it's happening. I mean, the conversations may have are in place.
Yes.
So we'll see what comes from that. Basketball Hall of Fame induction. Dwayne Wade makes an emotional tribute to his father. Caps the star-studded 2023 ceremony.
Yep.
Yeah, so the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2023 has officially been inducted after ceremony on Saturday that involved last tears and immense gratitude all around. It's one of the more star-studded classes in recent memory. It highlighted Dwayne, Greg Popovich, Tony Parker, and Becky Hammond, all 11 individuals, plus the entire 1976 Olympic women's basketball team, can now call themselves Hall of Famers.
Yep, congratulations, Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, they have the complete list online. You can see there David Hickson, Gary Blair, Gene Best, Gene Keady, Tony Parker, Paul Gasol, Dwayne Wade. Each inductee had their moment in the sun on Saturday. Dwayne Wade was a highlight. He talked about his humble roots in the Chicago area. He took a moment to recognize all the people in the building who had contributed to his success. He said, "My love of the competition came from seeing my dad and my uncles go at it." He also talked about how lessons from basketball helped him get through life. Yeah, and they go on to highlight other statements made by the people who were highlighted.
And I'm glad they gave him his flowers now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Beyonce shouts out Lizzo at the Atlanta show amid dancers' lawsuit. Queen B had a message for Lizzo while on stage at her Renaissance tour during her performance of Break My Soul at the Queen's Remix, where she highlights a lot of Black female artists and icons. She added Lizzo back into the mix. I thought that was still sweet because I know she's switched up the names from the actual recorded version. Remember one time, because Erykah Badu on Instagram, like, "I guess I'm everybody's," what'd she say? "I'm dressing everybody," or something she said about, like, a little hint at Beyonce taking her style because they were in the same style.
Yeah, about the hats, you know, like, she's the first icon to do it.
Yeah, well, she and Beyonce mentioned Badu twice at the following show. But she at one point did take out Lizzo, then she mentioned her again. And I think it was just nice. And then I think that, you know, it can be seen as a little response, a little for the live action, like the news was going on. But I don't think it's that big of a deal. But it's just something to note. And we were talking about this offline, but how just in, like, the Lizzo lawsuit and that whole thing, I think it's going to help her develop as an artist to have her team be tighter.
Mm-hmm.
The brand of Lizzo, and for her personally to separate work and friendships and how she has fun or how she celebrates with her working team. Just, you know, what you just know, you have to operate at a different level when,
yeah,
you know, especially when money's involved, working relationships and things like that, your brand has to be tight as far as, like, people know their role and y'all are all on the same page.
At all times.
Yeah, so I think that was the lesson everybody can take from that.
Yeah.
Until...
because people get comfortable and things happen.
Mm-hmm. And whatever, figure out whatever comes of that lawsuit whenever that happens.
Because, like you said, we was talking earlier, on jobs, you know, they have that motto or saying, "We are family," to get your mind thinking like, "Oh, I can really talk to this person, we can relate." But at the end of the day, the only family you have is the one you come home to.
That's right. That's right. I feel like a lot of millennials and younger, and just in recent times, a lot of companies, not all, but a lot of companies have played up on, you know, "We're a family," trying to express what the work culture is like. And they, you know, put in, "We're a family," getting you to believe that you can trust these people to care about you. But the whole point of saying that is to get you to care about the work.
Yeah.
You adopt what you would in caring about your family, people you stay with. You are there for however many hours your shift is, and you go home. You leave that there.
And you know what's so funny? When you look at the movie The Help, how those ladies did all that work so much, they didn't even have time for their family.
Right. And that's how it is for a lot of people now. You're at work more than you are at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, remember when we were in school, you told us school is your job. And that's true. Yeah. I'm at school for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And school didn't necessarily teach me. I would say my teachers did teach me how to think for myself.
Right.
That wasn't necessarily the curriculum, but the teachers I had cared. And they, in addition to teaching us how to regurgitate, remember, and learn about the topics we were supposed to learn about.
Thank goodness for those teachers. They're not trying to pay them now.
They did teach me how to think for myself. But I think when you look at examples of like what's going on in Florida, they're not trying to teach you how to or think for yourself. You're taught how to be a citizen and to be in the working class and to follow the rules of
whatever's written,
whatever governing body. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily how to think to yourself. And I would say college was that extra step of teaching me how to think for myself. I think if you go to vocational school, you're learning how to work for yourself, how to make money for yourself. Not saying you can't learn that in college as well, but around that time, it was like a step up of how to be my own person. And so when you think about when you go into the working force, when they say stuff like, oh, we're all friends, we're all family, is to disarm you. So you do have to...
It's almost like a mind game.
You do have to know, like I said, what you're signing up for. Read those contracts. Read the employee handbook.
Please read that employee handbook. I'm an activist.
Read the contracts you sign onto before you sign onto them so that you know what you're getting into. Also know what steps they have in place to handle an issue if you have one or if you have one. Because every day isn't going to be a good day. And if they aren't thinking ahead, then that might not be the right place for you. But you should always go into a job knowing what your options are if you need to make whatever decision you make for yourself. And so that's something to think about.
All right.
Last story we have today. Kobe Bryant's Nike sneaker designed by Vanessa Bryant, you know, his wife, has a release date. So Nike is releasing a new sneaker designed by Vanessa Bryant, the widow of the late Kobe Bryant. The Kobe 8 Proto Halo concept will be available on August 23rd, which would have been the basketball player's 45th birthday. Nike said in an announcement that the Halo concept will be an annual release that will honor and celebrate this special date. So ahead of the release, Vanessa took to the social media to treat fans with a teaser about the Kobe 8 Proto Halo shoes. So the Kobe 8 Halo. 8-23-23. And this will be one of many Kobe Halo styles coming soon. They're cute. They're simple, clean. It says it boasts notable features, primarily showcasing an intricately embroidered swoosh alongside an elegantly embroidered Mamba logo. That's what you're getting, the Mamba logo on the shoe. It's really simple and clean, nice white sneaker. So I'm sure they'll come out with different colors and styles each year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, I think that is a beautiful thing. It's a nice tribute.
It says the 8 silhouette is embodying the timelessness of an icon never forgotten.
Nope. Never forgot. Yeah. Oh, yeah, his daughter.
Yeah. The Mamba League Invitational invites 8 teams of the most talented high school players to LA to compete, both men and women, and it concludes in the championship game on Mamba Day. So they celebrate that on August 24th at Nike. The introduction follows the recent renewal of the partnership between the Bryant Estate and Nike. It was established just last year. The collaboration also encompasses a range of merchandise paying homage to Kobe's beloved late daughter, Gianna, who also lost her life in the 2020 helicopter accident. So according to the company, they will be donating all net proceeds from the sales of the Gianna shoes to the Mamba and Mamba Sita Sports Foundation. So I thought that's sweet that they honor both Kobe and Gigi. And Vanessa says she thanked Kobe and Gigi fans for the unconditional support. She said, I know this is an inspiring moment for my husband and daughter's global fans, and I'm very appreciative of each and every one of you. She concluded with gratitude for every fan around the world supporting Kobe and Gigi's legacy.
Yay.
We're in the main discussion today. We are going to be talking about Godzilla.
Godzilla!
Ma, I know you had a fascination with Godzilla for as long as I can remember. I just want to hop into some questions I have about your interest in Godzilla. I'm going to kick it off with some facts. Godzilla, also known as Gojira in Japan, first appeared in the 1954 Japanese film Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Godzilla is also portrayed as a giant prehistoric sea creature resembling a dinosaur. The original Godzilla suit was used in the 1954 film and weighed around 220 pounds and required two actors to operate over the years. It's had some of the same adversaries, including Mothra, King Ghidorah, and the Mecha Godzilla. Its distinctive roar, its main superpower, is created by rubbing a leather glove against a double bass string. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, that's interesting.
The tallest Godzilla ever portrayed in a film stood towering at a height of 380 feet or 118 meters, and that was known as the Shin Godzilla. And they've also had more than 30 films produced by Toho, the Japanese film company that owns the character rights. And you said, yeah, we have another one coming out in 2023 called Minus One. We're going to reboot the iconic lizard in an all-new time period. The original creators, Toho, is coming back and still bringing their interpretation of the Blood Monster movie to the big screen. Their latest entry is primed to start with a fresh reimagining of Minus One. And it's set to take place in a nuclear wizard in an altering time period.
Yeah, they're going to have another movie coming out with King Kong and Godzilla in March 15th, 2024. They're going to keep it going. It's taking on a dangerous threat of the massive and terrifying two giants. Well, something new. You know, they're always arch rivals, but they're good friends. I take it that way.
Yeah, so this the new Godzilla Minus One is set for its grand debut in theaters everywhere just in time for the holidays. It'll be a 500-foot-tall lizard, and it's expected to first go out in Japan in November, and then it'll be in the Western markets, like U.S. and Canada, in December.
I can't wait. You know I'm going to see it.
Yeah, they're going to have the anime release. And yeah. Let's come out. So yeah. That's what you look forward to.
I've always been fascinated by how they made them, you know, like from the 2014 science fiction one, 2019, you know, 2021 versus, now the 2021 was almost like the one that was in 1962. You know, they tried to do like a reboot of them, you know, why were they fighting? And they snuck some new little, I want to say, prehistoric animals in there. You know, I like Godzilla. Takes you away from what's going on in your normal rat race or working family just to sit back and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't forget about, oh, yes, the three-headed King Gothra, mm-hmm. like a wizard. I will call him the Terrible Triplets. It was like one body and it's three-headed type dragon. He will always kick their butts, though.
Do you remember when you first saw Godzilla?
I was in third grade.
Who took you to the movies?
My daddy. Yeah, I was in third grade in Brooklyn.
You weren't scared?
Not really, because he would talk about Godzilla, and I was like, who in the world is Godzilla? And sometimes they have like different little shows on TV, but I didn't pay attention to it. But when we saw it, I was like, what? I like this. because I was just fascinated with, you know, because first I didn't know if it was in Japan or China until he corrected me it was in Japan. I didn't know where these people was at. I was like, what? That's really going on? This monster's tearing up these buildings? He's going to get in big trouble. So I was always fascinated as a kid. I thought it was entertaining. And then I passed it on to my kids. You don't care for Godzilla too much, though, do you? It's all right.
I went with you to see, I think it was in, it was after 2016. We did see Godzilla. And I think Godzilla was fighting another Godzilla type monster. Mm-hmm. And they had the different, yeah, they had genetically made a Godzilla. And then there was the natural lead.
Godzilla came back to fight him.
Yeah, and they had different color atomic beams or atomic. It's called the atomic breath. That was me saying atomic beam. It's atomic breath, and it was exciting. Like it was just a lot for me. Godzilla has always been a lot for me because it's big and it reminds me of Cloverfield. Do you remember?
Oh, now that was really good because you didn't know what was going on. You knew it was a creature, but you didn't see it until the end.
Yeah, and that. The way that story was told was interesting, but Godzilla, the one we went to see, was so action-packed. It was good, but I'm not, like, I don't think I have the same interest in Godzilla that you do. Like,
oh, yeah.
I am with you because that's just, like, our tradition, and I think it's funny. But it's funny to watch you watch Godzilla because I know you like Godzilla because you don't go to sleep in the movie. Because
you told my secret.
When it's a movie you don't care about, 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes in, you.
If it's boring, I don't mean no harm.
Everybody we've seen, you have been wide awake.
Yes.
And talking and laughing, just enjoying yourself. So, of course, I'm going to go see Godzilla movies with you. But yeah, I just wanted to pick your brain about why. You enjoy Godzilla so much. It's just funny.
Yeah, I mean, because you got something so big as tearing up the world and tearing it up. And then you come to find out he is trying to protect.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, like, I'm coming to save the day.
And that was the main storyline in the one we saw.
Yeah. It
was like, I know y'all did not just make a fake me to use as like a military weapon. Yeah, but roast his ass.
Roast him up. Like a monster.
And a question I always had was, is Godzilla a girl? Because you would say she, and in the movies they would say he.
I always said she for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried to find the answer on the internet, and it's like up in the air.
Godzilla did have some kids.
Right, and so I found some articles. It says, no, Godzilla's not a girl. And some people say there's confusion about Godzilla's gender because Godzilla regularly has babies. And it says in the 1998 film, for example, most of the plot revolves around the fact that Godzilla has laid several eggs throughout the city of New York. Yeah. However, they consistently refer to the monster as a him in the film. And then it says, when discussing how the creature became pregnant, the lead character suggests that Godzilla is asexual. That means that it's able to reproduce itself. It might also be a type of reptile that can switch genders to reproduce with itself. If that's the case, Godzilla is both male and female. Western films depicting Godzilla, however, he is always referred to as male. In the original Japanese film, they refer to the creature as it, which suggests that Godzilla doesn't have a gender. Godzilla could be non-binary. It could be both, or it could be male. In most cases, however, Godzilla is not a girl. I like to think that Godzilla is non-binary.
Well, I'm going to think Godzilla is a girl. Because I'm thinking, like, look, you got to make some little somebody somewhere. You can have a little bit. It doesn't have to be a big lizard the same size to
Godzilla is huge.
So he can just like what happens?
This is huge
with the Black Widow spider. She knocks him off and eats him. So he don't have to stay around. So that's
okay. Godzilla is not binary. Godzilla is an it. I think it could probably produce for itself because you never see the like a little Godzilla family.
Oh, no. Godzilla. Somebody say something funny.
Grandma Godzilla, baby Godzilla,
baby Godzilla.
You know they don't Godzilla family.
Well, you know a lot of things be extinct in the world.
Did they kill Godzilla too? Global warming. Where's Godzilla at now that the water's boiling? Where'd she go stay at?
She went to Alaska.
Then she would freeze because don't blizzards need sun or warmth?
But she has those. Well, for Godzilla, he can activate his spine. You know.
Oh, with the atomic beam.
Yeah. When he get mad or get upset, he could think about something. Keep himself
alive. See, you're saying he. That's why it's interchangeable. That's why I said not.
That's why when you said I said he, then I say she.
That's so non-binary. They, Godzilla.
Ooh, I'm changing up for 2023.
Godzilla is non-binary. Okay. I think that's the show title. Besides the films, have there been any other forms of media, such as books, comics, or artwork, that have added to your interest in Godzilla or caught your attention?
Well, like you said, the creativity of how, from my time, how they made the little buildings and so many people they had to use to create him and move him around, to now, you got the green background, you got a little Godzilla to a massive Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and his teeth are different.
Mm.
You know, his sound is different. And when his walk, his movement, he's still tearing up the town. He's still looking kind of scary.
So you would say like how they create Godzilla over time is what really got you into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can see that, yeah, because they are doing different things with green screen. It's like more physical props now with lighting.
And like everything else improved.
I think that would be fun to, I would like to put on the Godzilla boots and stomp around a little miniature city. That could be fun.
That could be fun. I think in Japan, they do have a ride, like Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. Cause the birth-
Godzilla roller coaster.
Yeah, it's the birthplace.
You know, it's a fan base. You know, you got to be a fan. It's entertaining, you know. And think of all the millions of dollars this franchise has made.
Right.
Yeah.
My last question. Have you seen any parallel in Godzilla in any like broader cultural things or social issues? You were saying how she takes care of the environment or like fights back to save something.
Well, when she sees the enemy, like when they was trying to do their nuclear war, mm-hmm. make up missiles and stuff, she came in and she helped destroy it because they didn't understand what she was trying to do.
Yeah.
What Godzilla was trying to do. And until they found out, oh, you're not trying to come in and destroy the town. You coming in to destroy who was creating a problem that's going to blow up our city.
Right.
It's for safety reasons. So I see it like now we talk about our global warming and watching all these nuclear bases that we have. You know, make sure somebody is reading the levels of radiation so we can be safe. So it's like a little safety measure. You know, somebody's always watching. When you don't see them, somebody's always watching.
Anything else you want to add about your girl?
No. She's green. I like the color green, too.
Green is my favorite color. I like seafoam.
Mm-hmm. I like hunter green. Even before it was popular, people were buying cars. And I have always liked that hunter green for some reason.
Seafoam green is
your color. Mm-hmm.
For the last couple of years, I think that's my aura.
Yeah, I like green. When I see it in different ways and different colors, how you can style it and put other colors to it, to, you know, you can bring it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the trees, the grass. We need it to breathe, you know. It all has its own element. Or it would say it's feng shui to balance out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a little green in your life.
That's been another episode of Talking Brown Sugar. Remember to like, share with your family and friends, get your cousins, everybody. to listen.
Yes.
So you can be a part of the show. We love to know what you all are thinking, what you want us to talk about or explore. You can do that by hitting us up on social media, on Facebook and Twitter at Talkin' Brown Sugar, on Twitter at Talkin' Brown Sugar. You can email us at talkingbrown.sugar@gmail.com. You can send us questions, inquiries, if you want to be a guest on the show. We may explore that as well, so let us know what you percolating about.